This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's foreign minister says Turkey's security concerns in northern Syria should be resolved through diplomacy, noting that a military solution will only deepen the crisis there. The leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement warns Israel will not be allowed to mine a disputed maritime field unless Lebanon gets what it deserves. Also coming up, Russia says its military operation in Ukraine will go beyond the eastern region of Donbass, warning that it will move even further if the West delivers long-range weapons to Kiev. Thanks for joining us. Iran's foreign minister says Turkey's security concerns over groups operating in northern Syria should be addressed through political means, warning that military intervention will only aggravate the situation. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks during a joint press conference with his Syrian counterpart, Faisal Miqdad, one day after a three-way summit involving Iran, Russia, and Turkey within the framework of the Astana process to help end the conflict in Syria. Amir Abdullahian said the Astana summit in Tehran has been successful and has helped promote peace and stability in Syria and the region. He said protecting Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity are among Iran's top priorities in the region. Elsewhere in his remarks, Amir Abdullahian pointed to Israel's repeated airstrikes against Syria, describing them as desperate attempts by the regime to veil its internal crises.
Today, Israel is in its worst conditions, and the regime's sham measures, including sporadic and chaotic moves against centers inside Syria, are out of desperation and aimed at hiding the multi-layered weaknesses and internal crisis of the regime.
The Iranian minister said Israeli acts of aggression in the region have been answered, and the region will not remain silent on Israel's seditious acts. The Syrian official, for his part, said Damascus seriously opposes the U.S. hegemony in the region. He added that the Syrian nation will make any effort required to end the U.S. occupation of parts of the Arab country. Iranian national airline Iran Air has recently resumed direct flights between Tehran and Rome after a four-year suspension. Aviation ties between the two countries were severed in 2018 due to pressures by the previous U.S. administration, which unilaterally pulled out of the JCPOA and imposed many sanctions on Iran.
Iran's flagship carrier, Iran Air, has returned to Rome from July 14. A new deal recently signed between Iranian and Italian aviation authorities has revived the route connecting Tehran and Italy's capital, Rome. The deal is a revised version of previous aviation cooperation agreement, which stresses the importance of increased flights between the two countries to help boost economic ties and tourism.
Io già andai in Iran 20 anni fa.
I visited Iran 20 years ago, and I've been thrilled about that trip. I'm going again with a group of friends in September, and we're all very excited.
There has certainly been a more intense dialogue between Italy and Iran lately, and this is extremely positive. Having said that, we are still facing enormous difficulties due to the sanctions. However, we are confident that more European routes will be added by Iran Air in the future.
Iran Air, which has been flying to Italy for 55 years, also operates flights to the business-focused city of Milan in the north of the country. Aviation ties between Iran and Italy took a hit in 2018 when the US unilaterally withdrew from the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. Washington's withdrawal was followed by a wave of anti-Iran sanctions by the US.
I hope this resumption of the Tehran-Rome route will bode well for another resumption, that of the JCPOA, from which the U.S. unilaterally withdrew in 2018. It would be really important for tourism and commerce that flight connections between Iranian and European cities are established.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian traveled to Rome last week to meet his Italian counterpart and discuss the latest geopolitical developments across the globe. During that visit, Iran's top diplomat also met with tens of Italian industrialists and businessmen who showed a strong interest in cooperating with Tehran. Max Civili, Rome.
The leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says that Israel will not be allowed to mine a disputed maritime field unless Lebanon gets what it deserves. Sayed Hassan Nasrallah said that Lebanon does not want a war, but will not permit the Israeli regime to violate Beirut's rights. He said the issue may cause frictions with an appropriate Lebanese response, but added that it is possible that Israel will surrender even without a war. He underlined that Lebanon has given great concessions, but has not achieved anything tangible yet. The Kurdish gas field in the eastern Mediterranean remains at the heart of a dispute between Lebanon and Israel. Hezbollah had previously warned the regime not to carry out any extraction operations before the dispute is resolved. Lebanon also dismisses Israeli claims that the fields fall within the regime's so-called exclusive economic zone. Two Palestinian prisoners are in grave conditions as they persist with their hunger strike to protest their illegal detention by the Israeli regime. 40-year-old Khalil Awadeh resumed his strike after the regime did not fulfill its pledge to release him. Awadeh has now been striking for 130 days. He's a father of four daughters who has been arrested five times since 2005. The other prisoner, Raed Rayan, is 27 and has entered his 105th day of protest action. There are thousands of Palestinians in Israeli jails who regularly have to resort to open-ended hunger strikes to object to their illegal detention by Israel. Many of them are kept behind bars without being made aware of their crimes. In the past, the regime's jail authorities have exposed Palestinian inmates to systematic torture, harassment, and repression. Despite a UN-brokered truce, the Saudi-led coalition is still committing acts of piracy against the Yemeni oil ships. Yemen's petroleum company has held a protest in front of the office of the UN's envoy in Sana'a to condemn the Saudi violations of the agreement. Abdul Latif al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Amid the ongoing attempts to extend the UN-brokered agreement for another 6 months, Yemen's petroleum company held a protest in front of the United Nations envoy's office in Yemen's capital Sana'a to criticize Riyadh's violations of the truce.
The Yemeni Petroleum Company condemns the continued piracy and seizure of fuel ships heading to the port of Hodeidah by the Saudi-led coalition during the truce and despite obtaining entry permits from the United Nations verification and inspection mechanism. The move exacerbates the suffering of Yemenis and causes further increase in fuel prices.
Officials say since the beginning of June, the Saudi-led coalition has allowed only 8 ships out of 18 to enter the country and is still confiscating 3 other ships, which is a clear violation of the UN-brokered agreement.
The global market is witnessing a surge in prices due to the Russian-Ukrainian war and its repercussions. In the Republic of Yemen, fuel ships heading to the port of Hodeidah are subjected to piracy and seizure by the Saudi-led coalition. This is a clear violation of the terms of the armistice, and the United Nations continues to remain silent, and the UN envoy has misled the public opinion that the ships are entering smoothly, which is not true.
In early June, the UN managed to convince the warring sides to renew the truce for another 2 months. However, the world body has so far failed to force Riyadh to fulfill its commitments under the deal. Yemenis say the United Nations is responsible for undermining the peace process by turning a blind eye to the continued Saudi violations of the truce. They demand the world body to do its part as a real mediator and hold Riyadh accountable for its violations. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
At least 8 people have been killed and 23 others wounded in a Turkish artillery attack on northern Iraq. According to Iraq's Kurdish media, the shelling has targeted a tourist resort in the city of Zaqa, located in the province of Duhok. Reports say that all of those who died were tourists. Iraq's foreign ministry has condemned the attack. It says the shelling constitutes a blatant violation of Iraq's sovereignty. The ministry also says such acts of aggression are in breach of international law. Russia's foreign minister says Moscow's military operation in Ukraine will go beyond the eastern region of Donbass.
The geography is different now. It is not only about the DNR and the LNR, but also about the Kherson region, the Zaporizhia region, and a number of other territories. And this process is continuing consistently and persistently.
Sergei Lavrov was reacting to the flood of Western weapons into Ukraine. He warned the geographical objectives of the operation will move even further if the West delivers long-range weapons to Kiev. Russia launched the campaign in late February with the aim of demilitarizing and denazifying Ukraine. It has now taken Luhansk, one of the two regions that make up Donbass. Moscow has repeatedly warned the flood of weapons will not force the country to end the offensive and will only prolong the war. Russian troops have already captured territory in the southern regions of Zaporizhia and Kherson. The European Union asks its member states to cut gas use in order to prepare for a potential gas shutoff by Russia.
We are asking the member states to reduce by 15% the gas consumption. 15%, why? This is the equivalent to 45 BCM of gas. And with such a reduction, we can make it safely through this winter in case of a complete disruption of Russian gas.
The president of the European Commission said the move is necessary as Russia is using energy as a weapon to blackmail Europe. EU officials also asked for special powers to impose compulsory energy rationing if Russia cuts off Europe's gas lifeline. Moscow, however, says the bloc is threatened by a looming energy crisis due to its own sanctions against Russia. The Kremlin says the bans against Russian energy imports could, quote, lead to possible catastrophic consequences on the global market. Fuel prices have already been skyrocketing across Europe, with the EU aiming to cut 90% of its dependency on Russia's crude production by the end of 2022. The blistering heat wave is gripping much of Western Europe, triggering wildfires and causing deaths. The heat wave has been sweeping Spain for 10 days. Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez says over 500 people have lost their lives due to heat-related causes. He also warned of tough days ahead, as the devastating circumstances will persist. The extreme weather has sparked multiple blazes in Spain, as well as in other parts of Europe. Germany recorded its hottest day of the year on Wednesday. Britain saw temperatures of more than 40 degrees Celsius for the first time. The executive director at Sri Lanka's National Peace Council, Jahan Perera, thinks the new president is a man of, quote, great experience and might be able to lead the country out of a crisis.
There are two elements to the protest movement. One is the hardcore group of protesters who have been camping daily for the past 4 months. They are young people. They are more from a leftist background. They are university students. And they are insisting, at this moment, they are insisting that the newly elected president should step down because they feel that this election is not a legitimate one. It is by a parliament elected 3 years ago who have lost their mandate because of their misgovernance of the country. But this parliament has now elected a new president. However, I believe that because the new president is indeed a man of great experience. He has been prime minister six times on six previous occasions, including this one. And he is a very cultured man, very well educated, knows the ways of the world, negotiates and is a good negotiator. They feel that he might be able to, now that he's president, make a change. So I think the bulk of the people who also join the protest movement when they are called upon and when they feel it's necessary, will want to give the new president a chance.
As the race to decide who will be the leader of Britain's ruling Conservative Party drags on, heated debates and hard campaigning have exposed deep divides within the Tory ranks. Many are now wondering if the Conservatives can fix Britain's many economic woes when they can't seem to mend their own damaged ties. Rob Carter has more from London.
As temperatures in Britain soar, the race for the next Conservative Party leader is also heating up. Following further eliminations, now only three candidates remain. On Monday, Tom Tugendhat was eliminated during the third round vote, whilst Kemi Badenoch went out in the fourth. Rishi Sunak remains in the lead. Penny Mordaunt is close in second place, followed by Liz Truss. However, as the fight intensifies, things are turning bitter, with attacks on policy, along with accusations of ideological treachery, leading to candidates refusing to appear on future televised debates. Pundits believe the divisive race has exposed deep-rooted splits in the ruling party at a time when Britain faces numerous economic crises.
A senior Conservative journalist said to me that he found the entire leadership campaign wholly depressing. He thinks that it's been a competition to be negative. He thinks it's a race to the bottom in terms of showing what's wrong with the others rather than what's right with themselves. And crucially, we see a party divided. It seems to me that the Conservatives are going through an identity crisis, perhaps partly caused by Boris Johnson, who was a populist, without a very clear philosophy. Now, the next leader has to refocus the Conservatives on its more traditional values.
There can be little doubt in Rishi Sunak achieving a place in the final round, as he only requires five more supporters in order to achieve that place. However, the real battle will be over who joins him in second place. Two candidates will last into the final round, and then, of course, it goes to the votes from the Tory party membership to decide who the next leader of the party, and therefore the country, will be. Robert Carter, London.
In Britain, people are facing the deepening cost of living crisis as inflation rose to 40-year high last month. According to the Office for National Statistics, the Consumer Price Index rose to 9.4% in June from 9.1% in the previous month. That was the highest level since February 1982. The Centre says sharp rise in food and motor fuel prices are the main contributors to the rising inflation. The ongoing war in Ukraine is also said to be partly responsible for the price rise. The UK government is facing criticism for offering below-inflation pay rises to ease economic pressure on workers. Unions say that they want bigger raises. The Bank of England has also increased the interest rate five times since December to control inflation. It is predicted that the inflation could hit 11% in October. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Siyutu. Tümen. Yani...
Bazaar.
Historically, humans lived a colourful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle. But what brought humans into the valleys and grasslands, and later into a collective society? Some argue wheat domesticated mankind, settling humans permanently next to their fields. Humans have come a long way from traditional farming. Presently, some 38% of the Earth's surface is used to cultivate crops. Technology has revolutionized agricultural production, leading to more food security worldwide.
Oh, hello there. Welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This time we will explore the agriculture industry in a two-part series. The first part shines the spotlight on the marriage between technology and science for high-yield agricultural productions. The second part focuses on livestock husbandry. We wanted to see how the agricultural sector is developing new ways to increase the efficiency of natural resource use while also elevating the quality of cultivated food. Well, let's not waste any time. Let's walk through the fields of today's bazaar.
Our quest for answers led us to a company in Khorasan Razavi province that specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechi, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini-tubers. So what is a mini-tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production.
You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a solar system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production.
As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received three consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress.
پرسنل ما داره مدرک تحصیلی بالای کارشناسی ارشد هستن و اینها خیلی کمک ما میکنن در پویایی این مجموعه به همین ترتیب تمام مجموعه ها افرادی رو از ابتدا شروع کرده تربیت کردن و تحصیل کردن در این مورد و تک تک افراد از ابتدا روی رشته خاص خودشون کار میکردن از قبل از دیپلمشون برای این کار تأیید شده بودن و تونستن دوره دکتراشون رو در رشته‌ای بگیرن که مورد نظر مجموعه بوده و موضوع گزارششون رو مجموعه براشون تعیین کرده که این گزارش رو این رشته رو بخونن.
As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products. The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy. Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same two-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are two of the major culprits of reduced production. Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons. However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace. The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion, meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
In case you didn't know, and most don't actually, the country is home to more than 7% of global mineral reserves. That's significant. With over 80 different types of minerals, Iran is one of the top 10 mineral-rich countries globally. In total, the country has about 60 billion tons of proven mineral reserves, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world.
The mining ministry says the total production value in this sector is over $700 billion. This value has not been unnoticed by the government, which has been seriously pursuing several programs promoting the mining sector. Despite its enormous riches, Iran has yet to unlock its full potential as this key sector is still struggling to operate at full capacity. There are several reasons for this. One is a lack of necessary machinery and equipment for expanding this industry. So the government is focusing on geological exploration, extraction, and research of new products as part of areas for development. Another one of the government's programs to increase production is to increase mineral extraction. So organizations have embarked on reviving idle mines. Out of 10,000 mines in the country,
around 4,000 of them are idle. It's noteworthy that over the last 2 years, some 500 small-scale idle mines have been brought back to life. That's based on the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization. One of the benefits of the ongoing revival plan has been the rise in nationwide employment. Presently, well over 100,000 miners are at work in the sector. Mining in Iran has more work to be done, and it's still under development. Still, there are plenty of doers in this country and plenty more waiting for further investment opportunities. Iran's productions by far outweigh its domestic use, leaving lots of room for mineral exports. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact. Figures from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show a record high of nearly $12 billion worth of minerals and mining products were exported last year. This means there was roughly an 80% increase in exports year on year. Championing the export list in terms of value were steel ingots and related products, copper, aluminium, zinc, and iron. This is a pretty big growth spurt, actually. But government officials say export figures could be much higher if raw materials and other mining products could be further developed with added value. So, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized products in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. The current Iranian calendar year slogan was knowledge-based production and job creation. The title was given by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The goal is to promote and increase support for companies that engineer and produce advanced products that contribute to the economy.
Well, it's that time of the show where I should step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague is actually out there on the field. So, let's see that report.
In the modern world today, both industrialized and developing countries have modern installations capable of highly efficient fabric production. In addition to mechanical improvements in yarn and fabric manufacture, there have been rapid advances in the development of new fibers, processes to improve textile characteristics, and testing methods allowing greater quality control. Today, we visited Aram Takmil Teyfe Faro's company, active in the textile industry in Iran. In this company, there are various activities such as processes of weaving, dyeing, and finishing, and printing of different types of textiles while employing the strongest technical staff as well as modern European dyeing and finishing machines to finally meet customer satisfaction with quality products and innovations. Iran's textile industry has a capacity to produce a wide variety of products suitable for different market segments, both within Iran and across the world. Over the past years, close to 30,000 tons of different types of textile were imported. Presently, however, there are 78 textile factories active in the country, producing 90 million square meters of different kinds of fabric every year. Iran's Development Plan Vision 2025 has identified textile and clothing as one of the potential industries for expansion. The plan basically emphasizes on the need for technological advancements and improvement in productivity.
Many thanks for that awesome adventure, as always. Now, it's time to dive right into some of the latest developments and trends in Iran's agriculture industry. One trend is Iran's agriculture sector. It's a shift towards greenhouse cultivations. Now, a young entrepreneur from Khorasan Razavi province has engineered aeroponic cultivation towers, which can potentially save the country millions on imports.
It is basically an advanced form of hydroponics used in greenhouses. These are vertical circular structures with several openings where plants are placed nutrient-rich liquid, so they efficiently grow more colourful, tastier and more nutritious produce.
Staying on the topic of trends, farmers have forever battled pests and some have found better ways to coexist with nature while raising produce. One way is to fight bugs with bugs. A young entrepreneur is marketing his bugs to farmers to reduce pesticide use.
This product is in fact a bunch of tiny insects that are natural predators of certain farm pests that are usually controlled with insecticides. The developers say these creatures only live for a few days, so they don't pose a threat to the natural ecosystem of farms.
Well, that brings us to the end of this edition. I'm Samson Sees. See you soon.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. وليت شعري يا سيدي وإلهي ومولاي أتسلط النار على وجوه خرت لعظمتك ساجدة وعلى ألسن نطقت بتوحيدك صادقة بشكرك مادحة وعلى قلوب اعترفت بإلهيتك محققة وعلى ضمائر حوت من العلم بك حتى صارت خاشعة وعلى جوارح سعت إلى أوطان تعبدك طائعة وأشارت باستغفارك مذعنا.
Brothers and sisters, as you have been previously with us, we were discussing this excerpt of the Kumail supplication. وَلَيْتَ شِعْرِي يَا إِلَهِي وَسَيِّدِي وَمَوْلَاي Would that I knew, O my Master, my Allah and my Protector, أَتُسَلِّطُ النَّارَ عَلَى وُجُوهٍ خَرَّتْ لِعَظَمَتِكَ سَاجِدَةً That will you place fire dominion over the faces which have fallen in your prostration before your greatness? وَعَلَىٰ أَلْسُنِ نَطَقَتْ بِتَوْحِيدِكَ صَادِقًا Will you give the fire dominion over the tongues voicing sincerely the profession of your oneness? وَبِشُكْرِكَ مَادِحَا, and giving thanks to you in praise. وَعَلَىٰ قُلُوبٍ اَعْتَرَفَتْ بِإِلَٰهِيَّتِكَ مُحَقِّقًا. Will you place fire dominion over the hearts, acknowledging your divinity through verification, the minds encompassing knowledge of you till they have become humble, the limbs speeding to the places of your worship in obedience and entreating your forgiveness in submission? مَهَاكَذَا الظَّنُّ بِكْ. No such opinion is held of you. وَأُلَا أُخْبِرْنَا بِفَضْلِكَ عَنْكَ يَا كَرِيمُ يَا رَبْ. Nor has such been reported, thanks to your bounty concerning you, O Allah, the generous. We were discussing the most comprehensive kind of worship, which is prayer. Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions the different states of the one who is saying his prayer, and that these different states of prayer, along with recognition of the Almighty Allah, are somehow negating this idea that Allah will punish these faces, these hands, these body organs, these faces, and these hearts. The most important point, though, is that the servant is having a good opinion about the Almighty Allah. The state of the supplicant who has entertained a good opinion of the Almighty Allah. And this is one important part of recognition. We said that we have been recommended throughout our traditions to stay hopeful of the Almighty Allah. But contrary to this state of being hopeful is the state of despair of Allah's mercy. Is the state of qunut, of the acceptance of prayer. This is one of the things which distance the human beings from Allah's mercy. One may pray to Allah for something, and He, the Exalted, might delay the response because of the benefit of the servant. But since the supplicant, the servant, is not aware of this fact, while Allah is, the servant starts entertaining a bad opinion of Allah. He despairs of His mercy. He has brought su'ul-dhan, and this state of despair would veil him from the mercy of Allah.
I wish I had known, O my Master, my God and my Lord. Will you inflict fire upon faces which have submissively bowed in your prostration to your greatness, or upon the tongues which have sincerely confirmed your unity and have always expressed gratitude to you, or upon hearts which have acknowledged your divinity with conviction, or upon the minds which accumulated so much knowledge of you until they became submissive to you, or upon the limbs which strove to the places appointed for your worship, to adore you willingly and seek your forgiveness submissively. Such harshness is not expected from you, as it is far from your grace. O generous one, O Lord, you are aware of my weakness to bear even a minor affliction of this world and its consequence and adversity, although such afflictions are momentary, short-lived and transient.
Thank you, Allah. So good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
About this state of despair of Allah's mercy that veils the human beings from the mercy of Allah, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, a servant continues to be in the state of blessing, hope, and mercy of Allah, the Almighty, the Majestic, so long as he does not make haste, and does not despair, and does not discard prayer. He was asked, how one can make haste? He alayhi salam replied by saying, I have been praying to Allah since such and such time, but I do not see the response. And interestingly, in this very tradition, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam also talks about the importance of prayer, and the one who discards prayer will not see the mercy of Almighty Allah. But along that, making haste in the acceptance of prayer has been mentioned as one of the impediments of the acceptance of prayer. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, when one hastily prays to Allah and then goes away, Allah the Almighty, the Majestic says, my servant does not know that I am the only one who fulfills the needs. Dear listeners, let us end our discussion of this episode with a tradition from the Messenger of the Almighty Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He says, وَاللَّهِ الَّذِي لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّهُ لَا يَحْسُنُ ظَنُّ عَبْدٍ مُؤْمِنٍ بِاللَّهِ إِلَّا كَانَ اللَّهُ عِنْدَ ظَنِّ عَبْدِهِ الْمُؤْمِنِ. I swear by God, who has no partners, that there are no believers who have a good opinion about God and receive anything less than they expect from Him. لِأَنَّ اللَّهَ كَرِيمٌ بِيَدِهِ الْخَيْرَاتِ. This is so, since God is benevolent, He has authority over all that is good. يَسْتَحْيِي أَنْ يَكُونَ عَبْدُهُ الْمُؤْمِنِ قَدْ أَحْسَنَ بِهِ الظَّنَّ وَالرَّجَاءِ ثُمَّ يُخْلِفُ ظَنَّهُ وَرَجَاءِ. This is really interesting. Allah is ashamed of one of His servants having a good opinion about Him, and He subhanahu wa ta'ala acting otherwise. فَأَحْسِنُوا بِاللَّهِ الظَّنَّ وَارْغَبُوا إِلَيْهِ. Therefore, have a good opinion about God and be inclined to Him. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.